as gunshots echo across the wind-swept, snow-covered reaches of the wild Northwest, Quaker Puff Wheat and Quaker Puff Rice, the breakfast cereal shot from guns, present the challenge of the Yukon. It's Yukon King, swiftest and strongest lead dog of the Northwest, blazing the trail for Sergeant Preston of the Northwest Mounted Police in his relentless pursuit of lawbreakers.
On King! On, you Huskies!
Gold. Gold discovered in the Yukon. A stampede to the Klondike in the wild race for riches. Back to the days of the gold rush. With Quaker Puffed Wheat and Quaker Puffed Rice bringing you the adventures of Sergeant Preston and his wonder dog Yukon King as they meet the challenge of the Yukon. Yes, hear about the double-header breakfast treat of the week. Ask Mom to serve delicious Quaker Puff rice and Quaker Puff wheat together in a cereal dish, separating those two keen, ready-to-serve cereals with fresh, stewed, or canned fruit. Yes, enjoy both kinds together. Just try it. Mmm, boy, it's delicious. Quaker Puff rice and Quaker Puff wheat are shot from guns to make them bigger and better tasting. Crisp, tender, shot through and through with swell nut-like flavor, too. Tomorrow, eat rice and wheat shot from guns together. There's a treat, Quaker Puffed Rice and Quaker Puffed Wheat. Like many another adventurer who drifted north to the Yukon in the wake of the gold rush, young Gerald Fanhope was something of a mystery man, a man without a past. Although his Oxford accent bespoke a cultivated background, the young Englishman was obviously a drifter. Sergeant Preston knew no more of him than anyone else in Dawson City, until one day Inspector Maynard called the sergeant into his office at Mounted Police Headquarters.
Sergeant, have you ever heard of Sir Edward Fanhope?
Sir Edward Fanhope? Why, yes, I have, Inspector. An English general, isn't he?
That's right. They're a fine old military family, the Fanhopes. Been fighting England's battles since the days of Richard the Lionhearted. Anyway, I have a letter here from Sir Edward.
Oh?
It's about his son, Gerald Fanhope. Do you know him?
I know of him, sir. Mm.
What you know is none too favorable, I dare say.
Well, frankly, it isn't, sir. He seems to be pretty much of a black sheep.
Yes, so I gather from Sir Edward's letter. Listen to how he ends it, Sergeant. I should therefore be deeply grateful if the members of your force would keep an eye on my son, and if you yourself would occasionally send me word of his general situation. Signed, yours respectfully, Edward Fanhope, Baronet.
Would you like me to keep an eye on young Fanhope, sir?
Perhaps you'd better, Sergeant. We weren't sent out to the Yukon to play nursemaid to aristocratic young scamps. The force has never yet turned down a request for help of any quarter, high or low.
It was later that same afternoon at the Monte Carlo Café that Lou Jarvis, a notorious gambler, walked up to the table where Lola Bruce, the dark-haired café songstress, was seated with young Gerald Fanhope.
Well, there she is, the Yukon flower herself. I've been looking all over for you, Lola.
Hello, Lou.
Well, don't you sit there, baby. Come on. You and me are dancing this next dance.
Sorry, Lou, I don't feel like dancing.
You don't feel like dancing? You mean you'd rather sit and talk to little Lord Fauntleroy here?
That's right. Unless I'm boring him too much.
Boring me? Of course you're not boring me, Miss Bruce.
Well, you're not acting very enthusiastic.
Oh, but I am. I think your conversation is most delightful, you know.
Well, he thinks your conversation is most delightful. Well, that's just too bad, Percy. Because the little lady's going to dance this next dance with me regardless. Come on, baby.
Take your hands off me, Lou.
I said, come on.
Terry Fanhope, if you ever expect me to speak to you again, you'd better do something and do it mighty quick.
Look, Jarvis, I really don't think you should...
Come on, the kid's yellow. He's not worth wasting any more... No.
Well, so you finally got up enough nerve to swing at me, eh, Percy? I warned you, Jarvis.
Yeah, and I'll do more than warn you, Fanhope.
Oh, kill the poor fellow. Sure will. Look, Lou will knock him clean out of the cafe.
The gambler's next punch knocked young Van Hope against the wall of the Monte Carlo. Jarvis rushed after his victim, intent on delivering still more punishment.
Now, Van Hope, I'm really going to finish you off.
Just a minute, Jarvis.
Say, who do you think
we
you are?
We don't hit a man when he's down.
Why don't you mind your own business, Monty?
You'd better be on your way, Jarvis.
All right, I'm going. But tell little Lord Fauntleroy there when he wakes up that next time I won't be so gentle.
Is he all right, Sergeant?
I think he will be. How you feeling, fella?
Oh, I feel like a charge of dynamite just went off near my head.
Come on, I'll help you up.
Thanks, Sergeant.
Fauntleroy, I know this is no time for sermons, but can't you find a better way to spend your time than hanging around places like the Monte Carlo?
What difference does it make? Oh, Sam, no good, and let it go at that.
Oh, if you were no good, Jerry, you never would have stood up to Lou Jarvis for me.
They knocked me out. I'm no good, and I never will be.
Well, that's not true, Jerry. You weren't born to be a drifter. You can break away from this life and make something of yourself if you only try.
Why should I try? I've lost every friend I ever had. Even my father's disowned me.
Oh, wouldn't you try again? For my sake?
Lola, are you trying to tell me that you...
What if I am?
Sergeant, do you think there's any hope for me?
You're as good a man as the next, Jerry. You'll only give yourself a chance.
What would you suggest?
How would you like to go prospecting for a couple of months?
Prospecting? But, Sergeant, I wouldn't know pay dirt if I was buried up to the ears in it.
You don't have to. Sardo friend of mine, named Ike Ferguson, is looking for a partner. He'd show you the ropes.
It would certainly be an experience.
It'll be more than that, Jerry. It'll be a complete education. The Yukon's a hard teacher, but if you stick it out for a few months, I don't think you'll ever regret it.
All right, Sergeant. I'll do it.
It was almost 6 months before Sergeant Preston saw Gerald Van Hope again. It happened on Indian River, where Ike Ferguson and the young Englishman had staked a double claim. The sergeant could hardly believe that the bronzed, rugged figure that stepped forward to greet him, toughened by hard work and months of living in the out-of-doors, was the same pale man he had spoken to in the early spring of that year back in Dawson City.
Why, you're as brown as an Indian and at least 20 pounds heavier. Here, let me see your hands a minute. Not exactly the same lily-white hands you had last time I saw you.
He's a real sourdough now, Sergeant.
Looks like the two of you made a pretty good team.
I guess we did it that, eh, Ike?
You bet we did, Jerry.
Where are you heading, Sergeant?
Why, on the way back to Dawson.
Would you mind if I traveled with you?
Certainly not, Jerry. You'd be glad to have company.
Fine. I'll get my gear together and we'll leave right after breakfast. You see, I want to buy some supplies and pick up my mail at the Dawson post office.
Yeah, that's right. And just incidentally, he wants to see a certain little girl named Lola Bruce.
The Dawson post office was crowded as Gerald Fanhope stepped up to the window to get his mail.
All right, young fellow, what can I do for you?
Have you any mail for Gerald Fanhope, general delivery?
Gerald Fanhope, eh? Well, let me see.
Unnoticed by young Fanhope, Lou Jarvis was standing not far behind him in the line that had formed at the post office window. The gambler had not recognized the young Englishman until he heard his name spoken and repeated.
Fanhope. Well, for Pete's sake, if it isn't little Lord Fauntleroy.
Yeah, here's one for you, mister. A letter from England.
Thank you.
As Gerald Fanhope stepped away from the window, he slid open the envelope, and after removing its contents, tossed it carelessly away. Lou Jarvis' keen eyes noted the engraved crest on the envelope, and after Gerald Fanhope had left the post office, the gambler casually picked it up and studied it.
Edward Fanhope, Baronet, Fanhope Hall, Sussex. It must be Fauntleroy's old man. I wonder if... Yeah, Fauntleroy. It looks like you're going to be worth real money to me.
After leaving the post office, Lou Jarvis went straight to the back room of the Monte Carlo Cafe, where he found his partner, Keno, dealing himself a hand of solitaire.
Well, so you got back from the post office, huh, Lou?
Yeah, I'm back, Keno. Listen to what I got to tell you.
What's up?
Remember that chichaco named Fanhope that used to hang around here?
Fanhope? Oh, yeah, that limey that you beat up.
Yeah, that's the one. I just found out that his father's a baronet.
A what?
A baronet. That's a nobleman or something over in England. He's even got a coat of arms on his stationery.
Now, what about it?
What about it? The old coot's probably rich.
Yeah, suppose he would be.
Suppose we were to nab young Fanhope here.
Keep talking.
We write the old man and tell him we're holding little Lord Fauntleroy for ransom. For a reasonable consideration, so $10,000, we'll let the kid go without hurting him.
And if the old man don't kick through with the money...
That'll be just too bad for young Fanhope.
Jarvis, I think you really got something there.
Is it a deal?
Yeah, it's a deal. Well, what do we do first?
First, we got to lay our hands on young Fanhope.
He was out in the cafe just a few minutes ago looking for Lola Bruce.
What happened?
They told him she was working at Regan's place, and the kid asked directions how to get there.
Now, Regan's, huh? Well, it just happens that Mike Regan is a pal of mine.
Well, that's what I call convenient. Well, we'll go there and get Regan to look the other way while we nab him.
Right, Keno. Get on your parka and let's get going.
All right.
It was a week later that Lola Bruce came to Sergeant Preston's office at Mounted Police Headquarters in Dawson City and told the Mountie a disturbing story.
I'll come right to the point, Sergeant. I think something has happened to Gerald Fanhope.
Oh, what makes you think so, Miss Bruce?
Well, for the last few weeks I've been singing at a place called Regan's.
And... About 20 miles south of Dawson, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, some time ago, Jerry Fanhope came to see me there at the roadhouse. I talked to him for 15 or 20 minutes and... Then I told him I had to go back to my room and change for the next number.
Go on.
When I came back to sing, I noticed Jerry wasn't around. First, I didn't think anything of it. I thought he probably just stepped outside for a while. But he didn't show up for the rest of the evening, and he hasn't shown up since. He simply disappeared.
I see. Anything else?
Yes. Just before I went back to change, I saw Lou Jarvis and that tough pal of his named Keno come into Regan's.
Oh?
They were acting kind of funny. And I got the impression something was up. When I came back, Lou was still around, but Keno was gone, and I haven't seen him since then either.
What about Lou?
Oh, he's been hanging out there at Regan's ever since. He insisted on coming here with me.
You didn't refuse?
Well, I couldn't without making him suspicious. I had all I could do to shake him long enough to come here to your office.
I see. Well, Miss Bruce, we haven't much to go on. The situation certainly bears looking into. Suppose I go back to Regan's with you and investigate.
Oh, Sergeant, I'll be ever so grateful if you will.
How soon will you be ready to leave?
Well, give me half an hour to do some shopping, then I'll meet you in front of the music hall.
Fair enough. I'll see you there in half an hour. But the rendezvous was never to be kept. For as the dark-haired songstress walked away from Mounted Police Headquarters...
So you've been talking to the Mounties, eh, Lola?
Oh, Jarvis.
That's right. And I got a gun right under this rabbit skin robe that's draped over my arm, so don't try screaming for help.
What are you going to do?
Never mind the questions. Just walk over and climb into that sled. And, baby, if you make one false move, so help me, I'll put a bullet right through that pretty little head of yours.
We'll continue our story in just a moment.
Fellas and girls, look at who's here. Here's a fellow that's the laziest man I've ever seen.
I am the laziest man in the world.
Boy, you sure sound like it. Gee, don't you ever get tired of being such a lazy man?
Not me.
Gosh, I would. What do you do for excitement?
Oh, nothing much.
Boy, you sound so lazy, I'd hate to have the job getting you up for breakfast.
Breakfast?
Yeah.
Breakfast? Brother, now you're talking.
Gee, you mean you actually wake up for breakfast?
Boy, oh boy, do I. Man, I take that big old package of Quaker Puffed Wheat or Quaker Puffed Rice.
You like Wheat or Rice shot from guns?
Like it? Say, there's the only breakfast for me. And all you have to do is pour on the old milk, add some fruit,
hey, what's the matter?
I forgot. Gosh, what am I getting so excited about? It's not breakfast time now. So long, friend. I'll be seeing you.
Well, I'll be. That fellow may be the world's laziest man, but boy, did you see him perk up on the subject of breakfast. And no wonder. Quaker Puffed Wheat and Quaker Puffed Rice are just downright swell tasting. They're shot from guns. Actually exploded up to 8 times normal size to make them crisp and tender. Bigger and better tasting. What's more, these giant premium grains are shot through and through with bang-up nut-like flavor, too. And they're nourishing. Furnish added food values of restored natural grain amounts of vitamin B1, niacin, and iron. Enjoy nutritious, delicious Quaker Puffed Wheat and Quaker Puffed Rice tomorrow morning. Just remember, it's never sold in bags or bulk. To get the original, crisp, fresh Wheat or Rice shot from guns, always buy the big red and blue package with the smiling Quaker man on the front. He's your guarantee that you're getting the one and only Quaker Puffed Wheat and Quaker Puffed Rice shot from guns. Now to continue our story. Lola Bruce was captured as she left the office after talking to Sergeant Preston. Later, when the Mountie and King went to keep an appointment with the girl, the great dog called his master's attention to something lying on the snow-covered sidewalk.
What is it, King? Oh, a woman's handkerchief.
Let's have a look at it.
Huh, there's two initials on it. L.B. That could stand for Lola Bruce. Well, King, if you say she went that way, that's the way we're going. Up front, boy.
And King! On!
2 hours after Lou Jarvis captured Lola Bruce and forced her into his sled at gunpoint, the pair arrived at a lonely shack well hidden in the mountains north of Dawson City.
All right, inside, Lola. Come on.
Jerry!
Lola, so they got you, too.
Never mind the small talk. Just step inside, Lola.
What's up, Lou? How come you brought her here?
She got wise. Squealed to the Mounties.
The Mounties?
Yeah, don't get excited. She didn't tell them anything.
What makes you so sure of that?
Because she didn't know anything. She got suspicious, that's all.
Well, what are we going to do with her?
Fix her the same as we'd fix any other squealer. We can attend to that later, though. Meantime, tie her up.
All right. Come here, sister.
Okay, don't
listen,
push.
Kino. You too, Jarvis. If either of you harms a hair on Lola's head, I'm warning you, you'll pay for it.
Look who's talking big. Little Lord Fauntleroy himself.
Yeah, well,
never mind him, Kino. Just go ahead and tie her up.
Yep, tie her hands. Want me to tie her feet, too?
No, never mind. She won't run away.
Hey, look, Jarvis, I don't like this setup. How do you know the Mounties won't trail you and this girl to the shack?
How can they trail us here when they don't even know I've nabbed her?
Yeah, she's tired. Well, just suppose they let you nab her, so you'd lead them here to our hideout.
But, hey, I never thought of that. Oh, stop worrying. Even if they were using the girl as a decoy, how can they trail us with the snow covering our tracks almost as fast as we made them?
In case you don't know it, Jarvis, Sergeant Preston's got a dog that don't need tracks to trail a person.
But, yeah, maybe you're right at that. Tell you what, Kino. Take your rifle and go out and stand guard on that ridge overlooking the trail.
All right.
I'll swap places with you in half an hour. That way, if anyone's trailing us, we'll sure be ready for them.
Are you talking sense, Jarvis?
20 minutes later, as Lou Jarvis was just finishing a makeshift meal, Kino came rushing into the shack with a tense air of excitement.
Hey, someone's coming up the trail.
Can you make out who it is?
Oh, he's too far away. But there's a big free lead dog running ahead of the team, which means it could be Preston, the dog of his king.
Preston, eh? Well, if it is him, we'll settle his hash quick enough. You got your rifle ready?
I sure have.
All right. Let's get out there and gun him down as soon as he comes into range.
As the door slammed behind the two crooks, Lola and Jerry looked at each other with undisguised alarm.
Oh, it must be Sergeant Preston. I managed to drop my handkerchief in front of Mounted Police headquarters when Lou Jarvis kidnapped me. The sergeant probably found it and trailed us here.
They'll shoot him down without hesitating.
Oh, if only we could do something to warn him.
Lola, wait. Look over there on the table.
The knife Jarvis was using to cut the cheese. See, my feet aren't tied. I'll get it and cut you free.
Although her hands were tied behind her back, Lola had no trouble picking the knife off the table. The moment her fingers closed around the hilt, she hurried back to the chair where Gerald Fanhope was tied. Meanwhile, Jarvis and Kino had taken up positions on the ridge overlooking the trail and were watching the approaching dog team and driver with tense interest.
That's Preston, all right. I'll swear to it.
Well, don't shoot till he gets an easy reins. There's no use muffing the deal when we got an easy setup like this.
Don't worry. I'll attend to Preston. Hey, what about them two back in the camp?
Ah, they're all right. They won't... Holy mackerel.
What's the matter?
I forgot all about that knife I left on the table. I better go back and make sure everything's okay.
Inside the cabin, Lola had succeeded in cutting the thongs that bound Jerry Fanhope's wrists, and Jerry himself was now sawing away frantically at the cords around his legs. As Lou Jarvis burst into the shack, the last thong snapped, and the grim-faced young Englishman sprang to his feet, free at last.
So, Fanhope, you got free.
Yes. And now I'm going to settle the score with you, Jarvis.
With a knife, eh?
I don't need a knife to handle a rat like you. I'll throw it away.
Fanhope, that's the biggest mistake you ever made in your life.
Warily, the two men approached each other. And then suddenly, as they came face to face, Jarvis lashed out with a terrific left. But Jerry sidestepped the punch and came back with a smashing right. It sent the gambler hurtling back against the wall of the shack. For a brief instant, Jarvis stared at his opponent in sheer amazement. Then he recovered and waded furiously back into the fight. A moment later, the two men were trading punches in a wild slugfest that surged back and forth inside the tiny cabin. Jarvis had expected to beat Jerry Fanhope as easily as he had beaten him before on that afternoon months ago at the Monte Carlo Cafe. But he soon realized that the husky battler who faced him now was a different man from the soft young ne'er-do-well who had fallen victim to his punches on that earlier occasion. Watching the fight breathlessly, Lola thrilled to the realization that this time the man she loved would emerge victorious. As Jerry Fanhope's fist crashed squarely against his jaw, Lou Jarvis tottered weakly for a moment and then collapsed in a heap on the floor of the cabin.
Hey, Jarvis, I guess that evens the score a little.
Jerry, don't forget Keno. You've got to hurry.
That's right, Lola. I'd better go.
At that very moment, Keno was raising his rifle and taking careful aim at the approaching figure on the trail below.
Oh, I'll get it.
His finger was already squeezing the trigger as Jerry Fanhope burst suddenly out of the shack. Seeing that there was no time to reach Keno before the crook fired, Jerry shouted a frantic warning to the sergeant.
Sergeant,
hey, what?
He's ready to fire!
Startled by Jerry's shouted warning, Keno gave a jerk of surprise and the shot went wild. Whirling angrily, he prepared to deal with the escaped prisoner.
I'll get you for that!
But before he could level his rifle to fire at the young Englishman, Jerry was upon him and grappled with him for possession of the weapon. Jerry was winded by his terrific battle with Jarvis, and the big, heavy-set crook Keno soon caught him off balance and knocked him to the ground. But as the crook clubbed his rifle and prepared to bring the stock smashing down on Jerry's head, he himself went down before the savage onslaught of a great snarling dog.
Oh, help! Help! Get him off!
A moment later, Sergeant Preston had reached the top of the slope and had taken charge of the situation.
Help! Get this dog off me, Sergeant!
All right, King, back boy. On guard. Get up, Keno. You all right, Jerry?
Never felt better in my life, Sergeant.
Good. Get his rifle, will you?
Yes.
Now then, Keno. You're under arrest in the name of the Queen for kidnapping and attempted murder. Your partner, Lou Jarvis, will stand trial with you on those same charges.
A few minutes later, inside the cabin, Jerry and Sergeant Preston had released Lola Bruce and securely tied the hands of the two crooks.
I guess that'll hold them.
The same rawhide thongs they used on you and Miss Bruce. That's what you call poetic justice.
Oh, but you missed the best touch of all, Sergeant.
Oh? What was that?
Seeing Jerry lambaste Lou Jarvis. Oh, I've seen a lot of fights since I came to the Yukon, but this is the first one I ever enjoyed watching.
From the looks of Lou Jarvis' face, I can see what you mean, Miss Bruce.
It was several weeks after the capture of Jarvis and Keno that Sergeant Preston met the father of Gerald Fanhope in the office of Inspector Maynard. Sir Edward had crossed an ocean and a continent in frantic haste after receiving the letter from the two crooks demanding ransom money for the safe release of his son. As the sergeant listened to the bluff, red-faced old military man blurt out his remarks, he realized that Sir Edward was laboring under deep emotion.
I can't tell you how grateful I am to you both for rescuing Gerald from those criminals. I feel that perhaps I've been a little too harsh on the boy. After all, his mother died when he was very small, and I myself never had time to bring him up properly. Oh, he's weak, of course, always has been, and always will be, I presume, but that can't be helped. What can't be cured must be endured, as they say. Oh. Inspector, how soon can I see him?
Oh, you can see him right away, Sir Edward. Unless I'm mistaken, he's waiting in Sergeant Preston's office.
That's right, sir. I'll go call him. Jerry, will you come in now?
As I say, the boy has never been strong, and I realize now that... Gerald!
Hello, Dad.
But you've changed. You're not the scrawny, dissipated lad that left England. Why, you're huskier than I am.
Yes, I guess I have changed a bit, Dad. Thanks to Sergeant Preston here.
Sergeant, I don't understand all this, but I want you to know that...
Don't thank me, Sir Edmund. The credit belongs to Jerry himself for having the grit and determination to make himself over. And maybe I should add that a little of that credit belongs to a girl named Lola.
I want you to meet her now, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
Come here, Lola. Here she is, Dad. The future Mrs. Gerald Fanhope.
How do you do, sir?
Well, congratulations, my boy. Congratulations.
Thank you.
She's as pretty as a picture. But I say, do you think that you can wait with the wedding until we all get back to England?
I'm not going back to England, Dad.
Not going back? Oh, but you must. Why, there's the family estate. There's no reason why we can't get you a commission in the Guards.
But I don't want a commission in the Guards. I like this country, and I want to stay here.
Stay here? But, Gerald, what will you do?
Frankly, sir, I was thinking of joining the Mounties.
The Mounties? But you can't... Gerald, for once you have my complete approval.
Yes, King. Now we can report to the inspector that this case is closed.
In just a moment, Sergeant Preston will give you a preview of Wednesday's adventure. Fellas and girls, have you started building your swell new complete Quaker model farm? Listen. That's Bossy the cow. And that's Topsy the Shetland pony. Now these and 44 other detailed scale models of farm animals, farm buildings, and equipment all come with packages of Quaker puffed wheat and Quaker puffed rice. They're at your grocer's now. 46 different models in all on 8 different packages. You get as many as 6 exciting models to a single package. They're yours at no extra cost. There's no delay. Ask Mom today for Quaker Puff Wheat and Quaker Puff Rice, the breakfast cereals shot from guns. These radio dramas, a feature of the Challenge of the Yukon Incorporated, are created and produced by George W. Trendle, directed by Fred Flowerday, and edited by Fran Stryker. The part of Sergeant Preston is played by Paul Sutton. They are brought to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the same time by Quaker Puffed Wheat and Quaker Puffed Rice, the breakfast cereal shot from guns. Listen Wednesday when Sergeant Preston and Yukon King meet the Challenge of the Yukon in the case Dead Man's Map.
When I took the mail to the town of Big Tree, there was a map for Jesse Trent. It showed the location of a valuable gold claim. Of course, there were unscrupulous men in town who heard about the map and wanted to steal it. But they found King standing in their way. When they plotted to get rid of King, amazing things began to happen.
Be sure to hear this exciting adventure Wednesday. Ever notice how some dogs have thick, glossy coats? The kind you'd like your dog to have? Well, chances are dogs with good-looking coats and sturdy bodies get the right food. That's why you should feed your dog Kettle Ration. It's packed with vitamins and minerals, and he'll love it. You can actually see the chunks of lean red meat in every can. Choice cuts of U.S. government-inspected horse meat. Have Mom get Kettle Ration at her favorite dealer today. Kettle Ration, first in canned dog food. This is J. Michael wishing you goodbye, good luck, and good health from Quaker Puff Wheat and Quaker Puff Rice. So long. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.